right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the FearCast. This is the podcast dedicated to OCD and anxiety spectrum disorders, and getting your life back. I'm your host, Kevin Foss, and I'm a licensed therapist specializing in OCD and anxiety disorders. Thank you all so much for joining me today for this episode. We are getting back to the bread and butter of what this podcast is, which is a question and answer based show. So I have an audio question today that someone sent in via the Instagrams. To that end, if you are over at Instagram and would like to send me a message, or if you just like to see some silly memes I put up or silly posts I put up, or some perhaps sometimes helpful things, go check me out. I am FearCast Podcast over at Instagram. That's where I announce the podcasts coming up. If I have questions I want to ask, or if I am trying to poll questions from the audience, i.e. y'all, that will happen over there. And you can also send me a question over at FearCast Podcast at Instagram. Send me a DM, send me an audio question. That's the best way to get an audio question if you want your question to go to the very tippity top of the list. So I have a bunch of backlogged questions, but if you want your questions answered sooner, send me an audio question like Alyssa did today. So before I get into her question, I just want to make an announcement. So if you are in the Southern California area, specifically the Orange County area, come check out the OCD SoCal Speaker Series. I'm going to be speaking there as well as we're alongside a bunch of other folks. It's going to be held on Saturday, April 6th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. But if you come by, there's going to be a number of different talks by, again, a lot of different people. I'm going to be speaking on taboo subjects and intrusive thoughts and shame and, you know, all the super fun stuff. But I'm going to be giving a talk, and then there's going to be a large question and answer at the very end with a bunch of other people. Come check it out. I think general admission is going to be $15, so which is pretty good. Lunch and parking is going to be included. It's going to be held at the Costa Mesa Marriott, which is pretty nice. I spoke there last year as well for the same sort of thing, and it's a really cool, just kind of small little series conference, I suppose, a gathering of a bunch of therapists and people who are family members, who are individuals with lived experience. We're just looking to learn a little bit more about OCD and OCD treatment and how to help those help their loved ones go through OCD and anxiety treatment. So again, if you're in Southern California area, go check it out. If you do go, come on over, high five me, shake my hand, whatever it is, or just kind of glare at me judgingly. I don't know, whatever you want to do, whatever you feel comfortable with. That would be great. So as a random story, I don't know about y'all, but did anybody else get in trouble at the zoo for feeding a giraffe? Because I did. Random story, it's just kind of silly. I got in trouble with the zoo because there's a gaggle of people feeding the giraffe. I went, well, I don't want to feed a giraffe. So I grabbed the thing that they were feeding him. There's like a leaf off of a tree that they were like right by it. I held it out. Giraffe came down with his giant face and stuck out his very, very large black tongue and just grabbed the leaf. And it was surprising. It was amazing. This giant giraffes, 18-foot giraffe. And then promptly after that, some, very, very well-meaning, correct, they were correct in doing this. Zookeeper, I suppose, came over and said, stop doing that, you're going to break the animal. So I got in trouble, but I also got to feed a giraffe, which was super duper fun. Has anybody else out there gotten in trouble for doing something like that? If you do, and this has nothing to do with the podcast at all, I just think this is a funny story. Go send me a message over at FearCast Podcast at Instagram, or send me an email. I think it'd be fun to hear these stories. Or where have you gotten in trouble for doing something that was super fun, but you probably should not have been doing? I probably should not have been doing. My rational mind says, don't do that. Stop doing that. But how often do you get to feed a giraffe? Not very often. So I took it. So that was fun. Anyways, all right, I'm going to get on to Alyssa's question. I think that's going to be a more reasonable use of our time. So I'm going to play her question here, and then we're going to get on to the answer.
Hi, Kevin. I have a question related to partner-focused OCD, or maybe other-focused OCD or false memory OCD. My partner and I have been together about 5 years. Long story short, we got married in September, and I love her fully, completely. She's amazing. She has a long history of anxiety and was diagnosed with GAD when we first met 5 years ago. That's manifested in periods of agoraphobia, social anxiety, fears of flying, always needing a snack because of a fear of that she'll pass out if she doesn't have enough food, long history of rumination and intrusive thoughts, and even history of needing to take time off work due to the anxiety. All of these things typically manifest with panic attacks, and on the rare occasion that we would fight, she would also have a panic attack towards the end. I always felt really terrible that that would happen and would try to comfort her. I just hate that she's had to struggle with so much fear and anxiety. But that being said, it's also been amazing to watch her go to therapy and do CBT and EMDR and grow through a lot of these anxieties. I think the way that she's grown is really inspiring to me and inspired me to get into therapy myself. But around the time we started planning our wedding in the spring, she started asking for more reassurance from me. A lot of it was, you know, do you love me fully? Do you like me? Accusations that I wanted to control her or was trying to gaslight her at times. In November, she went on vacation to her parents and then texted me that she was not coming back. She never told me why, but just keeps saying that she's too terrified to speak to me. This has gone so far as she suggested we go to therapy, so I booked couples therapy, and she was supposed to go to the first session by herself, but she said she was too scared to do that. All of our friends now have blocked me. She's blocked me on everything. No one will tell me what's going on or why. Justin is too scared of me to talk to me. And up until this time, she's always said I was a safe place and that I felt like home. So all of this kind of feels like a big whirlwind for me. And I am, I know I'm safe and I know that I haven't done anything out of proportion to hurt her in this way. So I am just trying to look for answers. I know she had been told in the past she may have pure O, so any information you might have about that, I've been searching for answers for a while. I have an NP and a PhD, so I like intellectualizing. I've put together a lot of good theories, but my question is, can her fear and anxiety manifest in a way where she projected this onto me like this and created a memory connection? I feel like since I was there through a lot of the panic attacks, it's possible the brain could have created an association with me and fear. And then also with that, you know, do you have any advice as a partner in this situation for how I can best be safe and not give in to this notion that I'm a danger and trying to murder her? Like I said, I love her. It's always been her and I against her anxiety. So I'm still here trying to fight it and just hoping that one day she will join me in the fight again. She's special. And at the end of the day, I just want her to get the right treatment that she needs. Thanks. Appreciate it.
All right, Alyssa, thank you so much for that question and sending in all those details about this. First off, I'm so sorry that you are having to go through this and you and your partner are going through all of this. That can be, it is awful the way that OCD and anxiety and mental health issues can impact a relationship and to make things harder than things already are within a marriage, within a relationship. Having two people together is a recipe for argument and disagreement and struggle and disappointment and hope and love and fun and excitement and gifting and support, all of that. So OCD will grab onto it and twist it into something that is excessively difficult, painful, and hard for everybody. So my hope is that what I'll talk about here will give you a little bit of encouragement and a little bit of guidance, and hope that at some point, if you have a chance, send in another audio, send in another email with some feedback. Maybe some feedback, but some update. I think a lot of folks who are listening to this are going to want to know kind of what's happening and hope that things have been improving or going somewhere. So I say that all at the front end. All right. So it sounds like the main questions you have are, can fear and anxiety result in kind of projecting onto you these issues, these kind of complications and issues? And also, as a partner, how can you be considered safe and supportive and show her that, that, as you said, you're not trying to murder her? So I have questions about that statement, but we'll get there. So, to get into it. So the main question's about whether or not there's partner-focused OCD. So oftentimes partner-focused OCD, I think a lot of times we'd be considering that relationship OCD. You also mentioned false memory OCD. So those are kind of two manifestations. Oh, and pure O. These are all manifestations of obsessive-compulsive disorder. So we've talked about this before, and for partners out there who are just trying to wrap their head around that, and Alyssa, for you, if you're kind of new to the world of OCD and trying to wrap your head around what it is, I'll just kind of go over it very briefly and then kind of build from there. So OCD is an anxiety disorder that is caused by unwanted, intrusive thoughts, feelings, images, sensations, or urges that produce a sense of anxiety. Now, they can also produce a sense of fear or anger or a lot of different things, even a sense of neutrality. But generally speaking, it's going to be anxiety and fear. As a way to manage that, or a way to manage either the feeling of uncertainty, the feeling of fear, but also to regain a sense of certainty or confidence, someone's going to go through a pattern of compulsive behavior. And that can be pretty much anything that would either answer the feared story, as I like to call it, which is the, what if this happens? Or if this happens, then this happens. Or if I do this, then that might occur. Right? So oftentimes it can be an avoidance of something. There can be compulsive or, ritualistic behaviors. There can be reassurance seeking. And there's a lot of different ways that this can manifest. But through all of this, the goal is once the compulsion is done, the person feels that they feel somewhat better. They feel more confident. They feel more secure. They feel they've gotten the answer. Or at the very or they have some sort of hope that, their fear is not going to take place in the way that their anxiety suggests. Now, that feels good. That good feeling is temporary, though. And oftentimes, anxiety will show up with another question that pulls them back into the same cycle. So the relief that someone gets from doing a compulsion is short-lived. And what it does is it unhelpfully reinforces that cycle, because the initial question, the fear, is kind of this neutral story, this neutral question or this neutral accusation about oneself or one's future, one's relationships. And through the compulsions, the person kind of trains themselves into showing that this, the compulsion, is the way to deal with this. It's the appropriate, it's the right thing to do to get a sense of confidence and security and safety in life. So the only way that we break this, and what we do in treatment, is we're trying to pull out the compulsion as much as we can. By doing that, you're cutting off the reinforcement cycle, but you're also then having to learn to sit with a sense of uncertainty and that narrative in your mind of maybe this thing is going to happen, and also the subsequent feelings of anxiety or fear or sadness or anger or neutrality or emptiness, whatever it might be. And to say this feeling, though it feels dangerous and there's something within me that's saying this is bad and I need to fix this, we're saying, you know what, I can live through this. And this feeling is temporary. And me doing my compulsion is not going to give me resolution, is not going to give me certainty about the future. If anything, it makes things worse. And we also learn through that our worst fears are highly unlikely to happen. So it doesn't mean impossible, but that's what compulsions are trying to do. It's trying to say, I'm proving that everything is going to be okay and nothing bad is going to happen. And that's not the way that we live life. We're trying to learn to live with a certain amount of uncertainty and that we can live life and be at risk of danger without being at risk, right? Or without being risky, rather, living in a risky way. And we're learning that we can deal with it. We can manage it. We'll deal with it when it comes, whatever it might be. and then we can roll with it. We're building that confidence. Anyways, so Alyssa, that's kind of what we're doing. So you've mentioned a lot of different, or a couple different subtypes of things. So I kind of want to address a little bit of those. So one thing in particular, and well, actually, you said she has a history of OCD and GAD, and you said agoraphobia and social anxiety and kind of needing a snack for fear of passing out and, you know, avoidance of flying and intrusive thoughts. So all of that can be, you know, symptoms of and are signs of OCD and GAD. So none of that is a real surprise. And then you said, you know, as, you know, you got closer and closer to the wedding that, you know, a lot of these reassurance questions started coming up. And a lot of those reassurance questions are very typical of relationship OCD. So if you want to know more about relationship OCD, I'd encourage you to go back just an episode or two to episode 178 with Rand Littman. And he talks all about relationship OCD, how it works, what to do with it, how it manifests, how you can be supportive, etc. And hopefully we'll do a follow-up episode just to go over some more details of things. But that question of like, do you love me fully? What that's rooted in is this fear. What if she doesn't love me fully? Well, first off, that can be uncomfortable. That can be scary. Like, what if she doesn't? Well, then what? What does it mean if she doesn't? And our brain naturally goes through these different permutations because that's the wonderful part about our brain. It's the terrifying part too, but it's the wonderful part where we can think about things that haven't even happened yet. We can imagine things that have never occurred or that we're trying to predict the future. And that's wonderful and terrifying because in this story, it's, oh no, what if she doesn't love me fully? Well, then what? Well, then maybe we're going to break up. Maybe this is doomed and I'm going to be stuck with someone who doesn't really love me. What if I don't love them fully? What if we're just in a loveless marriage and none of us are happy and we resent each other? Or what if I'm now stuck with this person and I'm going to miss the opportunity to be with someone who will love me fully and accept me and want me, right? So that's where it can inspire, or that's the narrative, this feared story that often inspires that compulsion. Do you love me fully? And when you go, of course I do, she goes, oh, good, she does. And that's that little bit of relief. But then eventually there'll be a disagreement or that sideways glance or that thing that is just completely neutral. And the brain will produce this question. She did that. Maybe she doesn't really love you. Even though she just ruminated about it and stressed about it and asked you about it and you gave her the answer. The question is, yeah, but are you sure? Yeah, but check again. Yeah, but ask in this different way. Yeah, but what if this other detail that, you know, she's holding back things from you, right? Well, she's lying to you, all these things. Just more caveats to pull this person back into the cycle of uncertainty and rumination and fear. And that's kind of what OCD does. So it's a similar question to, you know, do you like me? I mean, it's kind of asking the same question another way. Now, you did say there were accusations of control. So that raises questions for me as, you know, the accusations of control are atypical for someone with OCD. But they could, you know, they could be related to a feared story. However, if there's this belief of that you're trying to control her in some sort of way, again, that's not something that would be typical of someone with OCD. That might be something else. That might be, you know, a genuine relationship issue. That could be an issue with, that could be a paranoia. That could be a delusion of some type. It could be something else, which brings me to this next point. It could be something else within the relationship. So one of the unfortunate parts is that I don't know you. I don't know what's going on in the relationship. And some people who may call into the podcast or may send me a question, you know, we might try to put out the best version of our relationship. So there may be something that I'm missing or some bit of information that I just simply don't have that could lead her to believe that you are trying to control her. I also don't know if maybe she has a history of kind of funky relationships where she has been controlled and there was something within this that was contributing to her fear. Now, you raised the question earlier as well about false memory OCD. So false memory OCD is going to be another subtype of OCD that raises the question about whether or not somebody fully remembers something from the past or is remembering something incorrectly. That's going to result in a lot of rumination about the past, a lot of kind of scrupulously going through a memory to see if it's accurate and have a memory in mind and then compare it to one's emotions. Does that feel right? Does that not feel right? Did that happen or did it happen like this? And through these various permutations of trying to get certainty, and again, that thought process, that mental rumination someone goes through in false memory, and there can also be reassurance seeking, there can be Googling going on in that, there can be avoidance in all of this. So compulsions can vary from person to person and within the different subtype. But through the continued rumination about the past, sometimes a false memory or a distorted memory can be created. This is not always and for every person, but they can be. So there's been some research done out there, and Elizabeth Loftus, that's her name. You can look up some of her stuff and how false memories are created. She's done a ton of work into memory. Anyways, I'll leave it at that. Go check her out. But that false memories can be created, unfortunately, through the process of mental rumination. Now, does that answer the question as to whether or not there is genuine, you know, belief that you are controlling her? I don't know. I don't know. So that's something that, you know, could be going on. It's something that would need to be looked at. And unfortunately, everything that I would do here is just simply speculation. But that's why I'm here, is to speculate, because I don't know. That's what podcasters do, right? We just kind of, do we make stuff up? I don't think so. We make some stuff up. That's true. Anyways, we're doing our best. I'm doing my best. Here we go. So the other thing you said was like, all right, she went on vacation, is not coming back, hasn't told you why, all of her friends have blocked her. That's atypical. Again, raises red flags for me as to, I need some more information here. What happened? What's going on with this? And you know, the reality is you sound like you are in the dark. If you are in the dark and she truly is just bounced, just left, that has got to feel awful and confusing and sad. It's sad. And a bunch of other fancy words that I just simply can't remember. I've often said men are the Crayola 8 box of emotion, and women are the Crayola 64 box. Yes, it's stereotyping, but it's somewhat true. So moral of the story is I'm not coming up with all the emotions that I could, but again, it's the end of my day. And anyways, here we go. All right. So I would be confused too. You said that you were trying to get into a relationship or trying to get into couples counseling, which I think would be the right thing to do here, but she was too terrified to go to therapy. Again, I don't know what's leading to that fear. Now, absolutely, it could be some distorted sense of the relationship based in a falsely based intrusive thought. It could be the result of some historical trauma that's going on. So there's a lot of stuff that's going on with that I just don't really know. And the fact that the friends are not talking to you, I think, just further adds to this. All right. So, you also said maybe it's pure O. So let's talk about pure O. So here's what pure O is. Pure O is OCD. I'm not going to try to pretend like it's something else that's special or different. Pure O is OCD. Pure O is the idea. So it's purely obsessional. So it's only obsessions. For OCD, you need to have both obsessions and compulsions. People with, quote, pure O are of the mindset they do not have compulsions. They are obsessing all day, and it's just the thought. It's just the question all day, and they don't do any compulsions. They're just they have obsessions. It's a misnomer, and it is inaccurate. It is obsessive compulsive disorder, but it's obsessive compulsive disorder without external or outward observable compulsions. The compulsions oftentimes are, or oftentimes in this case, they're always done inside. And that can be through rumination, that is through memory checking, that is through crystal ball reading the future, that can be through physical checking, evaluating one's emotions, evaluating one's physical sensations, comparing them to previous feelings or memories of feelings, etc. All of that is compulsions. I will not be told otherwise. It is a compulsion. It is an effort. It is an effortful task done to get certainty and alleviate anxiety. Now, I'm getting spicy here because I think I'm having an argument with someone in my mind who disagrees with that. I don't know. I don't know if they're out there. They are out there. Whether or not they're fighting with me about it is a separate conversation. I just think it's silly. Anyways, so back to the pure O idea. They're trying to do something to alleviate the anxiety, and they're doing that through these mental means and hoping it's going to work. Now, as they're going through the process, it does work because they get to a memory, they get to a thought, and they go, okay, it feels, I can kind of sit with that, and that feels right enough, so I'm going to go with it. But again, that question, the accusation is always going to come back. So I've been sitting here because I had this other thought that I was going to say about pure O, but unfortunately it has slipped my mind. And unfortunately it's gone forever. Hopefully it will come back in my continued explanation of this. So anyhow, Alyssa, that's pure O in a nutshell. Now, back to your questions or to your questions. Can fear or anxiety result in projecting onto you the issues created in false memory? So I suppose we can say yes, they can, but it would depend on how pervasive and how seriously they're taking their thoughts. You said that your partner's gone into therapy. Has she gone into therapy with an OCD specialist, or is she going in with a kind of general talk therapist, or is she going in to a therapist and focusing on something different? Those would be some questions to ask, or those would be some things that I'd want to know about, and really encourage your partner to go work with someone who is an anxiety specialist who has more has more experience with that. But that being said, folks with OCD, there's this kind of balance that they have. I've mentioned this before, the insensitive OCD joke. What's the difference between someone with OCD and someone who's crazy? Is it the person with OCD knows they're crazy? Okay. It's insensitive. It's using the term crazy. If you are offended by that, I apologize. I tend to use that word liberally because it tends to defuse and kind of bring a little bit of levity to the situation, I suppose. All right. But what does it mean? Is that the person with OCD, there's this part of their brain that goes, I know this is inaccurate. I know this isn't right. I know this is, unfounded or ill-founded, perhaps. But the feeling of fear and of terror and of obligation and urgency speaks louder oftentimes than the logic of their rational mind. And that's where the compulsions come in. So the person may have a false memory and they may get kind of wrapped up into it. And depending on how seriously they take their thoughts and seriously they are listening to that feeling of fear as opposed to their rational mind, they might be buying more into that and can hold other people account to that. Now, that would be a somewhat rare circumstance, but I would say it's not unheard of. But that would be something that only your partner can answer. Now, how can you be supportive and how can you be safe through all of this? I mean, I think that's ultimately right now, that's probably the most important question that you can ask. Now, I do have to address the point about how to show that you're not trying to murder her. So what's up with that? Where did that thought come from? Has she said, you're trying to murder me? I mean, that would certainly speak to that, the perhaps paranoia about accusations of control, or maybe there's been something else going on that makes her feel that you are dangerous. But yeah, I don't have an answer to that. I would love you to give me an answer to that as to where that thought is coming from and how often that thought or that accusation has been thrown out there, or if you're just kind of throwing out an extreme example and trying to prove that you are safe, or the way that she is acting makes it feel as or seem as if she feels like you are a legitimate threat to her safety. I don't know, but all of us listening are very interested in wanting to know what's going on with that. All right, but what can you do to be best supportive? Well, reach out. Be consistent. be supportive and encouraging that you want to know what's going on, that you want to hear, that you want to be a supportive and loving partner in all of this, that you want to be someone who is safe and is treated as they are safe. And the way that you do that is by continuing to be a safe person. And that's kind of a silly way to say it. But express curiosity. Resist judgment. Resist trying to make change to it. Start by showing interest in what's going on. Just trying to gather information. You can address things and be apologetic. Find out if there is anything that you did. Whether or not you think you did them, whether it doesn't matter. Reach out to say, is there anything that I did that led to this? Something I said, something I did, something I didn't say or do? What's leading to this? Perhaps one way to do that is to reach out to those friends and be consistent about trying to find out more information. And in a way of saying, she's in pain. I love her. I want the best for her. And given that she's in pain, I want to find out if there's anything that I can do to help. So reach out to her, reach out to the parents, be consistent in that. Another thing that you can do is express hope and compassion, meaning expressing compassion to her anxiety, to the situation that, or the thing that she's feeling, the situation that she is in, expressing that, gosh, it must be really hard to be in that place where something is going on that she feels so terrified, that she feels so unsafe, and that you want the best for her. Express hope for the future, for the relationship with you two. Hope that you can be seen as safe. Hope that you can be someone who is of service to whatever she's needing at this time. And lastly, taking care of yourself. It doesn't serve your partner or yourself to stress yourself out, to ruminate excessively, to put yourself out to the point of exhaustion. Continue to do the things for yourself that are life-giving, that are encouraging to yourself, that are meaningful. Continue to stay in contact with the friends that are in contact with you, doing things that just kind of living your life of going to work and doing your hobbies and taking care of yourself. All of that is still going to be important through all of this so that you can be that person for when your partner is ready to reach out and share or ready to reach out and to work on these things, that you're ready and that you are you are the person who is ready for it. So, Alyssa, there's a lot of unanswered questions to all of this, and I apologize that I can't answer all of them. Ultimately, at the end of the day, and as I mentioned at the top of this, the only person who can answer all of these questions is indeed your partner. So keep reaching out. Keep expressing curiosity. And for yourself, educate yourself on what OCD is. Certainly you asked me, and I hope that my answer has been of help. You can read the book, The Imp of the Mind. I love this book. I've talked about this before. It's this short little book. So it's The Imp, I-M-P, of the Mind, written by Lee Baer, B-A-E-R. Check that book out. It's a short little book. It goes over kind of the more pure oath stuff. So more things that can lead to more internal compulsions. But it's a great book on just what OCD is, because there's a lot of books out there on OCD and they are very long and some of them are very poorly written. But that is a great one. So check that out. There's going to be a number of other resources out there. But also for you, it may be helpful if your partner is struggling with OCD this time. You can also work with an OCD therapist to talk to them about how they can be supportive, or how you can be supportive to your partner, and also so that you can bounce some ideas off them to kind of see, you know, is this OCD? Is this not OCD? Is this something that is there something within that that you can start to help out with in the most effective way, given the complications and given the typical presentations of OCD? So, Alyssa, I hope that's been helpful. Again, thank you so much for sending this in. But when you have a chance, send in a follow-up, send in some updates on what's been going on, if anything has changed, if something has been, some more information has been out there, because I think that, all right, I'll speak for myself. I want to know. I'm curious. And I think a lot of other people will be as well. So again, thank you so much. And if other people out there have other bits of advice or guidance or support for Alyssa, send them in and I'll put that in on a future episode. So thanks so much and best of luck. Thank you for listening to the Fearcast. If you would like your question answered on a future episode, please click on the Submit a Question link at fearcastpodcast.com. If you would like your question answered sooner, please send me a recording of your question to questions@fearcastpodcast.com or by sending me an audio message through Instagram by DMing me at fearcastpodcast on Instagram. If you like the Fearcast, please write a review on your podcast platform of choice. Please remember that the Fearcast is not substitute for psychotherapy. If you need a little bit of help in your recovery, please go over to fearcastpodcast.com and click on the Find Help link, and there's going to be some information for you there. So until next time, take a risk, challenge yourself, and don't take your brain too seriously. Bye.